No, you're Mrs. Tell me your full name.
Cleora Erickson.
Cleora Erickson.
Yeah.
And you were Cleora Bachner.
Yes.
And you know me from Anchorage. My mother is Abby Abbott. I think we met in Anchorage 20 years ago. You lived in Anchorage in the 40s, 50s?
Yeah, I did,
I just made the connection, the first name Cleora. You grew flowers. You had something.
I always had a lot of plants.
You had gardens and flowers.
Yeah.
Roses. Didn't you grow roses in Anchorage?
I tried it a few times, but not very successfully. I grew mostly African violets.
It was the African violets. My
mother
loved them.
At one time I had 120 pots of them.
That's what it was. I remember the last time I saw you, I mean, this is irregardless of the tape, it just now dawned on me who you are. My dad was with the Road Commission, and then he went to the Army. He was an engineer. But my mother was a member of the Woman's Club in Anchorage.
Yeah, I was too for many years.
Yes, and she met you in the Woman's Club, and you were friends there. It just dawned on me that. And she and I were driving down some street in Anchorage, and we saw you and we stopped. I don't know whether you were walking or driving, but we were in the car talking back and forth.
Yeah.
And that's in the 50s sometime. And it was just one of those moments that I remembered, you know. And then I never put together the Bachners here, Bachner Air Service.
Yeah.
Is it Jess?
Jess, that's my oldest son.
Yes. And he's had the aviation business here for many years, hasn't he?
All his life he's been mixed up in flying.
But you came to Alaska in 1904, was
Six.
It? 1906. At 4 years old.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me now, who were your parents?
Well, my father's name was Cassady, C-A-S-A-D-Y.
Yes.
We spelled it different than any other Cassady I've ever seen. And Arnie, don't.
Huh? It's all right, don't worry. That's all right. So, now, your parents' name was Cassady.
Yes.
And, why did your father come to Alaska?
Well, I don't really know. I suppose I was too young to remember. I suppose he heard about
the gold mining.
And the mining, and then, although he never tried to mine, he was an engineer, what we called an engineer. He ran the machinery on the mines, the hoist and the boiler house took care of the.
Where was he from before that?
Well, I think he came from North Dakota.
I see.
Into Canada and married my mother in Canada. And then we spent 3-4 years, they spent 3-4 years in Canada and then they came up here.
I see, and then where did they go first?
I think it was Engineer Creek.
That's here in Fairbanks.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, that's
it
the engineer.
Was,
Creek
it was
came
here.
To.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And do you recall how they got here?
Well, my father came ahead, and we came on a boat up the Chena River right to the docks that were in front of. Where the NC Company used to be on First Avenue, there were big docks all along there where they unloaded the people and the freight and the whatever they brought into Fairbanks.
And then did you move out to the Engineer Creek area or did you live here in Fairbanks?
No, we went out to Engineer Creek the first summer and in the winter we moved in a log cabin over on the slough over there by the coal bunkers. The slough, which is non-existent anymore.
Yes.
It's disappeared somewhere. It was ran along there by the coal bunkers. And we lived there for oh, 3 or 4 years, I guess, in a little log cabin.
Hmm. That would be your earliest memories then of Fairbanks.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Hmm.
Mud and dirt roads and...
And a small town.
Yeah, all log cabins. With quite a scattering of saloons all over the place.
Yes, because Fairbanks would have been about 5 years old then.
Yeah. Thing I remember the most, and I think is the most fascinating, is the livestock that they brought in. Now, I always was of the opinion they drove it in over the Valdez Trail from Valdez. Perhaps they brought some of it up on barges, but they brought it alive in herds, herds of cattle and herds of sheep, flocks of sheep, I guess you call them, and group bunches of pigs, and they drive them. There was only one road across the bridge, and which would be down Cushman, across the bridge through Garden Island out to Birch Hill, where they had corrals they kept them in. And we went out there berry picking many times, and my half brother and I and whatever kids were in the group always hung over the fence and fed the animals, pulled up weeds and to feed them. And then they slaughtered them a few at a time as they sold the meat, because there was no cold storage. They couldn't keep anything unless it only alive.
Yes.
Deliver ready to use it. Wechter Brothers, I think they even had the meat market those days. And many people don't know that.
No, I think Heidi Karstens remarked to me once that there had been a cattle drive down from Circle. And he said they drove the cattle down as if it were a regular thing. And I inquired about that, and someone told me that, I think it was maybe Mr. Creamer or someone who had grown up here, they said they had never heard of it except one time, that somebody brought some cattle into Circle City and drove them down. But this other person implied that they had brought them down regularly, that it was like a cattle trail, that they barged them in on the Yukon to Circle City. And so I don't know, I've always been intrigued with that. And then I did hear that they had brought the cattle up from Valdez and the livestock, you know, but not too many people know about that.
They brought in quite big herds of them, because I remember it was a very exciting time for all the kids.
When they drove those herds through town,
they had cowboys on horseback and dogs.
Is that right?
To herd them. And of course the noise was terrific, the cowbells and the cowboys yelling and the dogs barking, and every kid on town made for the highest point of high fence or the roof of a cabin, or you got yourself out of the way so you didn't get trampled on. But you just had to see it, of course. It was very exciting.
Oh, what a thrill. And how many head would they have, maybe? How big a herd, I wonder?
Well, probably 40,
maybe a couple,
50 at
40
a time.
Uh-huh.
They'd have a big bunch of them.
Yes.
And they'd keep them out there in the corrals until they'd slaughter them a few at a time.
Well, that would have been exciting, really, particularly when you think about, there must have been a sense of isolation here in Fairbanks at that time. A certain amount of being far away from all the
world. Well, of course, a kid never notices.
No, that's true.
They had the slaughterhouse over there on the Slough, or where the F.E. Company is now. Or is the F.E. Company there anymore? I haven't been over that way for many years.
Well, I was just trying to think.
What's the name of that slough that runs along? Not Dead Man's Slough.
Well, it was what came to mind, but it isn't. It's, I think it is Dead Man's Slough.
Well, they had a big slaughterhouse over there, and
yes,
then they had one down First Avenue.
Oh.
Quite a ways down for...
Now, when you say down, do you mean toward the Tanana?
Down river.
Down river, yes.
Down river.
Hmm. Now, I've never seen any evidence of that. I didn't know that.
Well, that's been many years
long
ago.
Long gone.
Long gone.
I'll be darned.
Because that one down on the bank of the slough was deserted when I was, maybe 12 years old.
Well, now, you grew up here. Did you know Clara Russ?
Oh, my God. I've known Clara for 65 years. I lived with them and went to school when I was 15.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, now, let's see. Your dad, did he continue to work for a...
No, my parents separated and he left the country.
Well, he did, and your mother remained.
She remained and worked as a waitress and whatever she could find to work at.
Sure.
And my dad left and took the boy, my half-brother, with him because he was his son, and so he took him. And I never knew what had become of them. They just
disappeared from your life. Yes.
Yeah.
So then you continued to grow up here.
Yes.
And did you stay then with Clara for a while?
Well, I stayed there one school year. The year that before June was born, you know her daughter June?
Yes, I've met her.
Well, I was there the year before June was born.
Mm.
So I've known the Russ. That's
yes.
Over 60 years or
yes, sure.
Right around 60 years ago.
Yes, because you were a very little girl then.
Well, I was 15.
Yes.
I'm almost 73.
Are you?
Maybe I wasn't 15. Maybe I was only 14.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, then what happened? Let's see. You grew up and you went to school here.
And then I went to Livengood. They had the stampede at Livengood in 1915. And my mother, and she had remarried by this time, and my stepfather and me went over on the stampede. And that was very exciting for me because, like my mother used to say, I didn't have any better sense, so I didn't worry about anything being a kid, you know. We got shipwrecked. The boat sprung a leak, ran into a snag, and sunk. And we had to hurry up and get on shore. There were 13 men and 3 women. And I had a cat along, which some of the men, being superstitious, claimed caused the accident. We spent about a week on the bank of the river, the Tananaw River. And it rained, it just poured the whole week. Everything was sopping wet. And the men put up a tent that they lived in, and they put the women on the barge, which was full of oat sacks, clear up. There was just about space enough for us to crawl in and lay down to sleep. And if you've never slept on oat sacks, I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
Wavy, you know.
Oh, of course. Humpy and lumpy.
And it's most uncomfortable. You can't, no matter which way you lay,
couldn't get comfortable.
You can't get...
Oh, no.
There's too many hills and hollows.
Yes. Well, now, what boat was this?
That was a Shoshana.
It was a river boat.
A river boat. Captain Hackett was a captain.
Oh.
I haven't heard anything of him for many, many years. He probably has passed away long ago because, of course, he was much older than I was, so.
Yes.
Then Teddy H., piloted by Captain Finger, you've heard of the Fingers. There was Carl and Teddy, and there was 3 boys. They were about my age. Their father piloted the Teddy H., was the name of the boat. And they couldn't take us on board because they were loaded as much as they dared to be loaded. So they went up and unloaded their freight and came back and got us, the passengers. And Captain Finger, I always remembered him because he could swear longest, loudest, and the worst of anybody I ever heard. And he made a regular habit of it. So they took us up, this was just a little boat, a small boat. We were very crowded and there was no place to sit. We had to sit in the engine room. And being women, we couldn't, the bathroom facilities were, there weren't any. And the men, of course, being men, they were, they didn't have the problem the women had to go.
That is true.
So we had to ask the captain to stop the boat and let us
go ashore.
Yeah. And the one woman was Mrs. Munson from Munson's Roadhouse. You've heard of Munson's Roadhouse?
Yes.
That was very popular in the early days.
And where was that located?
On the Valdez Trail.
Yes.
But they quit running it. It was not there anymore.
Yes, I see.
And so she went to Livengood. She was the other woman, a very, very nice woman. And the captain said, "Well, I can't stop the boat. What do you want to stop for?" And she said, "Well, we women have to get out and climb a tree." And finally he
got
the message. Let us out so we could find a bush.
Sure.
But you know, something like that in those days, in a situation like that, was a real problem.
Well, it still is.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you've got women with men who are particularly unaware or insensitive to this biological difference,
thoughtful.
You've got a problem, yeah.
So, take one of those pillows.
Oh, I just prop my back here. I'm used to, I put a hard thing back there.
Oh.
Carry my purse for that reason. What caused the Shoshana to sink?
It ran into a snag. You know, the river wasn't cleared out. Fallen trees had fallen into it and rotted off, and the end would be sticking in on, probably out of sight under the water.
Yes.
What they call a snag. And we hit that and it poked a hole in the bottom of the boat.
It did.
So that's how come we sank.
I see. Gee, it just, it's hard to realize those things really could poke a hole through the bottom
of
the boat.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you hit them with quite a force, you know.
Sure.
Some of those old trees were probably a foot and a half in diameter, or maybe 2 feet. And you hit that full speed and it pokes a hole.
Well, so then, what did Captain Hackett do?
Well, he...
When he lost his ship, I'm curious, his riverboat.
Well, he went with us to the next stop, which was Log Jam. Teddy H. left us off at Log Jam. And I don't know what became of him. He went back to Fairbanks and
found himself another boat.
I never knew what happened to him.
Yes.
But we got, the Teddy H. took us to Log Jam, and that was a bend in the Tolovana River where the logs had accumulated for years and it was way high, piled up and blocked the river for a long ways. So instead of going, when you got to the Log Jam, you had to get off the boat and go across country. So we went, they had built a tram to, you know what a tram is? Well, it's like a train railing, only it's wood.
Oh no, I didn't know what a tram was.
And they had carts, they built some kind of carts and they'd put the freight in these big wooden carts and hitch a horse or two to it and pull it across this neck of land that, so you wouldn't have to go over this log jam.
I see.
And it rained. And it rained all the time. All the time this was going on. And people who had arrived before we had pile their freight on the boats would just unload the freight on the riverbank and go back after more. And
because there was a pretty good sized rush.
The river rose something like, I think it was 22 feet.
Good grief.
And all this stuff was
had been
covered. And when we got there, the river was receding.
Oh.
And it was uncovering, but all this food was ruined.
Oh, that's too bad.
We got to the next stop. Heavens, I forgot the name of it.
Well, now, to get up to Livengood, you went down the Tanana then to the mouth of the Tolovana.
Down the Chena here, past Nenana, up the Tolovana River to Log Jam, and then across this neck of land to get around this log jam. And then we landed, then after we took to the river again.
Well, you could go up the Tolovana then.
Yeah.
Continue up that.
We went up as far as I forgot the name of it. Well, anyway, we got to this next stop. It wasn't called halfway. Well, anyway, when we got there, there was tons and tons and tons of West Fork was the name of the place. Tons of freight all along the riverbank that had been underwater. And there was 2, 3, 4 dead horses that had eaten moldy hay, soured hay, and died from the effects of it. And the place was the biggest mess I have ever seen. All these thousands of dollars worth of groceries and personal
goods.
And the beans, sacks, all, they were taking in mostly dried stuff, rice, macaroni, beans, spaghetti. And all of this had swollen up, of course, and split the sacks, and the beans had sprouts on them this long, and it was just an awful mess.
By golly, I wonder if there's still a bean patch up there along the shores of the Tolovana.
Well, there might be.
I don't suppose they went weather over, but that's how these things get into place.
But there was
an
awful mess.
Gee, that must have been.
Then we, from West Fork, we went on up to the next, the end of the river. And we had to have our freight taken in by pack horses because there was no roads. And we walked, and we didn't. My stepfather had built a cabin at Mike Hess Creek. I don't know who Mike Hess was, but he's somebody that had been there before we were, so they named the creek.
I thought of you so many times through the years, and you know, I just remembered Mother talking about you. Yeah. I'd met you a few times, and I've always thought of you as Cleora. And as I say, it just now dawned on me, I just recognized you. But anyway, what was the name of your stepfather?
Nielsen, Jack Nielsen.
Jack Nielsen. So then he settled on Mike
Hess Creek and prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there a couple of years. And that's when I went in to live with the Rust family and go to school.
Oh, I see.
That winter. But
how far out from Livengood was this?
Oh, probably 8 or 9 miles, something like that.
Did you get into Livengood very often?
No, we had to walk, of course, and wade the mud. The mud was up to your knees. And
that would have been a day's walk, really.
Oh, yeah, sure would, was.
I've heard that they had actually in the mining camp, that they really had some very lively times there, dances, that there was a roadhouse there.
Yes, they did. But, of course, we were kind of isolated over on Mike Hess Creek. And you heard of Roy Ferguson, no doubt, who ran the independent lumber company here in Fairbanks for many years.
Oh, yes.
Well, they were over there, and they had a little girl about 2 years old. And they lived a couple of miles from us. And I used to go up and borrow her for the day for company.
How about that? Yes, it would have been lonely.
Yeah. I was the only, and we had taken in papers that we had wrapped our stuff in, we packed, you know, torn magazines up and taken the pages to wrap up dishes in. And well, my mother didn't like this moss between the logs of the cabin that was always falling down into your food, and so she papered the house with these pages. Every scrap of paper was valuable. We didn't realize when we wrapped dishes in it how very valuable they were going to be. But I spent hours standing on a milk case reading these pages on the walls of the log cabin, even the ones that were upside down. And then, of course, I'd have to make up this part of the story that was against the wall
that was missing, maybe.
It was missing. We had the old Comfort magazine. Do you remember that? It was a woman's magazine.
Yes.
My mother took that for years, and that's what our cabin was papered with.
For goodness sakes, what did you use to put it up there? Flour and water paste?
Yes, she mixed the
How about that?
But that's quite a trick when you try to read pages and pages upside down. It passes the time.
Yes, and what else did you do to pass the time?
Well, I went rabbit hunting. I hunted rabbits for the dogs, and I went berry picking when the
berries were ripe.
When they were ripe. And
how about helping your stepfather in the mine at all?
I went out and staked myself some claims. He took me out and helped me stake some ground.
He did.
But I couldn't be around where they were sinking the prospect holes. There was nothing I could do there but stand and watch them. I helped my mother with the cooking, and I was the chief dishwasher. And
girls always get stuck with that job.
What?
Girls always get stuck with that job.
Well, I did. And our beds, we made our own, they were made of poles, and we went out and cut dry grass, and we cut spruce boughs, first small spruce boughs, and piled about 6 or 8 inches of small spruce boughs over the poles. Then we went out and cut dry grass and put it in the ticking. That mother had brought this ticking from Canada. And every couple times during the summer she'd fill it with a new batch of dry grass, and that was our bed. So.
My, that's amazing. That's most interesting. I guess people did this sort of thing in rural areas all over the world, really.
Well, I guess they had to.
They knew how to do it, and it was a part of life, but still, by that time in the cities, areas, things were becoming a little more more modern. And so you were living, you were making do with it. You still had the knowledge of making a stuffed dried grass mattress.
Oh yes.
You know, but
and mother made her own washboard. She'd forgotten to take a washboard, so she whittled one out of a board. It wasn't very satisfactory, but it was better than nothing.
I'll bet she got slivers in her clothes.
Yeah.
What did you do with these claims that you staked?
Well, if you didn't find any gold on them, you just let them run out. You didn't do the assessment work, and they reverted back to the government. And
you'd have been 13 or 14 then. Did you try to do anything with it at all?
Well, the men, my stepfather sunk some prospect holes on it, but we didn't land on any pay.
I see.
There was lots of prospectors up and down the creek. They'd come over in the evening. They'd go walk 5 or 6 miles just to spend an evening, and they played cards a lot. But I never played cards. My stepfather he had an old-fashioned, old country idea that girls shouldn't play cards. Well, I was 14. Could have played 500 was their game. But they'd come over in the evening, maybe from a couple of different camps, maybe there'd be a half a dozen there for the in the cabin for the evening, and they'd make these bugs, you know, a can with a candle in it.
Yes.
For lanterns.
Yes.
And that's what they'd have to see by. And they didn't mind walking 5 or 6 miles just to spend an evening to have company.
Hmm. Now, this was mostly in the summer, was it?
Well, summer and winter.
Did you go through a winter there?
Yes, several of them. Hmm. On Hess Creek. I was in Livengood 10 years, all told.
You were?
So I went through 10 winters.
Oh. Well, you really saw the mining rush on Livengood,
yeah,
to come and go then. And then the dredges came in somewhere.
Oh, no,
there.
That was many years later. Many years.
Was it?
20, 30 years later.
It was?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Hmm. Well, was it all of the mining was done by sinking the shaft in and hauling the dirt up and...
Yeah.
And
putting it in a dump. They'd pile it up and they'd mine it in the winter, and then when spring came and the water, there was water to sluice with, they'd sluice it.
Hmm. Well, then you kind of grew up in the, on the,
yeah,
on the creek there. Is that where you met your first husband?
Yes, I met him on Hess Creek the first winter we were there. He was one of the fellows who used to come over and play cards. But of course it was a few years later before we got married.
I'll be darned. Now, what was his name?
George Bochner.
George Bochner.
Yeah.
He came up then to mine.
He came, yes, he was just a kid. He was 22 years old. And he had met my stepfather up in Livengood. And when he came down with my stepfather to Westport to get his freight off the same boat that my mother and I came on. Oh, he came to Log Jam. We met him at Log Jam because we had to haul our own freight to Westport. So he came down with my stepfather too. And they had an awful time in this flood. They slept out, of course, under the stars and the brush.
Under the rain.
Under the rain, and they had to get up. I know they always told about the one night they had to get up 3 times and move to higher ground. The water would come up and come in their bed, and they'd have to get up and move to higher ground to get out of the water.
Hmm. Hmm. That must have been quite a trip down that river.
It was. I had a whale of a good time because my mother said, well, I didn't have any better sense, you know. I wasn't worrying about all the things that were driving the adults crazy. I thought was funny.
Well, yes, you know, it's just too bad that people can't appreciate some of the humor. They're so busy worrying about the labor that has procured,
yeah,
goods.
Well, we had funny things happen. There was a young Jew taken in the supplies for a clothing store, and everybody stood guard over their pile of goods, the stuff that we brought up that was dry, of course the wet stuff that had been underwater, nobody worried about that, but the stuff that came up on our boat, they had to stand guard over it so nobody snitched her.
Yes.
So this young Jew stood guard, and there was 5 or 6 piles of supplies and men watching them. So my mother felt sorry for this bunch, and I don't know how this came about, but she took to cooking for the bunch of them. There was one tent which the women had, Mother and Mrs. Munson and I. So Mother took to fixing meals for this bunch.
Well, this is a natural thing, you know.
And each one would bring up something from his pile of supplies to cover his meal. So, but this young Jew stood off back. He wouldn't join the bunch. He was going to be kind of to himself. So one day he jumped my stepdad for being a ladies' man and waiting on the ladies and all this. And so my stepdad was a great big good-looking Dane, He stood there and looked at him. He said, "Well, isn't it all right when the lady's my wife?" And the poor guy was so mortified, he went back by his pile of supplies and stayed there. He never, he hadn't realized it.
Of course, sure.
So that kind of took the wind out of his sails.
Yeah, he must have had his eye on your mother and not realized.
Well, I don't know what his idea was in, but it was a great, to me it was a great adventure.
Oh, yeah. What other sort of things happened offhand?
Well, that winter we had a tragedy on the creek. My husband was mining, was singing Prospect Shaft with his partner, Albert Jorgland, and they struck gas. The way they, one would work the windlass on the top and the other one would go down the shaft. They'd put in the saw, they'd drive points and put in the saw. Mm. And then the next day one would be on the windlass and the other one in the shaft, and then the next time they had a saw to take out, they'd reverse. The one that had been on the windlass would be in the shaft, and they took turns. So early one morning he came running down to our camp, which was probably 3 miles from where he was, and his partner had gone down. It was his turn to go down and dig out the dirt, the thawed dirt, and he rang to be hoisted up, and George started hoisting him up, and he fell out of the sling. They just had a rope like a swing they sat in, and he'd struck gas and was gassed. So the men from our camp, my stepfather and his partner and a couple other fellows that were nearby, and they all went up to try to help him get this Albert out of the shaft, but the gas was too strong. So they tried to go down several times and they couldn't. And George was bound, he was going down, and they had to hold him. They wouldn't let him because they knew that he'd just two of them down there instead of one. So he was terribly broken up. So they sent me up the creek to get another crew of men that was about 6 miles up the creek, and I was scared to death to go through the woods by myself. There was bears and, but anyway, that was no time to be scared. So I took off and I went as fast as I could, and I finally got to this other camp. Well, the only one in camp was the cook, and the rest of them had gone up the creek to work on a ditch they were building. And he told me to go up the ditch, up the creek, follow the where they were making the ditch. And I told him I had run myself all out of wind. I could hardly stagger, say nothing about going any further. So I told him to go, and he said, well, he was baking bread. I said, well, I'll make sure darned old bread of that. So when he left, I just gave it a couple of flops and left it and went on back. I wasn't going to stay there and mix bread at a time like that. So he went up and sent that crew down. They worked all day before they cleared enough gas. They ran canvas hose down the Prospect Shaft to draw out the gas, and they finally were able to go down and bring up Albert's body.
Hmm.
And you know, the strangest thing that happened many, many years, good 30 years or more later, we were in Seattle, and we went to a sourdough, Alaska sourdough celebration of some kind, and we got to talking to an old fella, and George and he was talking mining and one thing and another, and the old fella said, you know, I had a nephew went to Alaska many years ago, and we never ever heard from him, and his name was Albert Jorgland. So George told him what happened to his nephew.
Oh,
He's buried in Livengood. He's one of the few people buried there.
What a story.
Wasn't that a coincidence?
Yes.
You wouldn't run across
isn't
a thing
that
like that?
And no. Almost destiny was determined to bring word of...
Yeah. He found out what happened to his nephew.
Oh, darn. That's interesting. Huh. So George was badly shaken by that.
Oh, yes. He was terribly upset.
What did he do? Continued mining? Did he get another partner?
No. We went then after the funeral. The men went over to Livengood with the, they took the body over on a pack horse, cowboy style. You see them come in with the bodies on a pack horse. Well, that's the only means of transporting. And someone in Livengood built a casket, and they buried Albert on the hillside.
Mm.
And George came back to his cabin. He was very upset. So. My stepfather wanted to go to a place about, maybe 5 or 6 miles or 7 or 8 miles. I never measured distance. You just went, until you got there. And he wanted to go over, it was called Patterson Lake, and stake some ground over there. So he and his partner went over to Patterson Lake, and he told George to bring my mother and me over the next day. That he would sort of slash out a trail, mark a trail. He just went through the woods. There was no path or anything. So we went over the next day, and there was quite a gang over there looking the country over. Well, maybe 6 or 8 men. And there was one cabin, and there was one long bed across the end of the cabin, a long bed. And everybody slept in the same bed. And we had our heads together and our feet going the other way. And it was my first duck I shot. I shot a duck.
What kind of a gun? Shotgun?
No,
or was it like a 22?
It was a 22. Oh. I had bought that 22 from money I earned panning on Esther Creek.
A
couple of summers before, when I was a kid, I was always panning if I could find any gravel that had any gold in it.
So that you got your first duck with your own 22?
Yeah.
How
I shot lots of rabbits, but that was my first duck. Mm-hmm. And the lily pads, I never saw such. They were big enough you could have sat on them and sailed around. They were enormous all around the edge of that lake.
Mm.
We stayed over there 2-3 days and picked berries and just explored the country. And then we came back and took up where we left off.
I see. So then did George come back then to his own cabin?
He came back and got a different partner and continued on.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Fairbanks then when it was school time to live with the Rust family and go to school.
I see.
And I rode in over the trail from Livengood to Olness with Mrs. Ernie Shermer's two brother-in-laws.
Hmm.
Jasper and Harvey, they were driving the freight team.
By that time there was a freight team in there.
Yeah. They just slashed out roads. They didn't build them, they just cut the trees down so they could drive. And I always remembered this Jasper because he chewed tobacco and it ran down all the way down and piled up on the front of his shoes.
Oh no!
And he rode shotgun. And he told me that the reason, I asked him what he was always sitting there holding that shotgun for. And he said because they carried a lot of gold from the cleanups. And I thought they were kidding me. I didn't believe a word of it. But later on, I realized it was true.
Did they ever have a holdup?
Yes.
They did have holdups?
Yeah. They had holdups and they had all kinds of schemes. There was one fella His name was Samson. He was mining on one of the small branch creeks of Alive and Good. And it was just before cleanup in the spring. You see, they'd sluice, as soon as the water thawed out, they'd sluice for a week or two, then they'd have a big cleanup. And he went around and told everybody that he was expecting a big cleanup. But he was short of money. Could he borrow? And he borrowed from everybody in camp but us. We didn't have any money, so he couldn't borrow from us. But he even borrowed from the laundry woman, poor old Irish Mary. And he collected up about $20,000, and he took off. And he knew that his cleanup wasn't going to be any good because his ground wasn't any good. So he went to Fairbanks, and from there he vanished. Nobody ever saw or heard of him again. He cleaned up. He cleaned up.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Gee, that was terrible, but terribly funny.
And the poor old laundry woman, I felt so sorry.
Oh my,
yes. What a dirty trick.
Gee, isn't that awful. Golly. And nobody could recover.
No, and then nobody ever knew where he went. He just disappeared.
He really stole a wad.
Yeah.
Well, did anybody ever hold up the wagon?
Not that I recall, but there were.
What time? You have to go to dinner in about, well, in a half an hour. Is dinner at 5, is it?
5, yeah.
Yeah. I talked to the Estors 2 or 3 years ago, Bill and Thelma Estors. And Bill Estors.
I know them, but I can't.
Well, I think he was over there in the 20s in Live and Good.
Well, you see, I left there in 25.
But he spoke of, I think it was Two-Step Charlie. He told how, I don't think Two-Step Charlie was his partner, but he mentioned a number of stories of men who had nicknames. And I was going to ask you, did you know any of the nicknames of these men? Were you familiar with any of them by their nickname and aware of how they got their names? There was Too Much Johnson and Two-Step Charlie, or Two-Step somebody, and he said that Two-Step would come by and somebody had a gramophone, different ones had gramophones, and somebody put on the record, and Two-Step Charlie just loved to dance, and all he knew how to do was a two-step, but he just loved to dance, and he'd get anybody to dance with him that he could. They didn't care whether it was a girl or a fellow, you know, just so he could dance. Or wasn't that he liked the boy, he just liked to dance. And
I remember the name, but I can't
put
the man with it.
Mm-hmm. But there was the Dutch Kid. Now, the Dutch Kid was Heinie Karsten's partner.
I remember the Dutch Kid, yes. I don't know how he got his name, but there was a Finn, this Irish Mary, she ran the laundry. She was an odd soul. She was awfully good, but rather odd. And her boyfriend, they nicknamed Irish Oly. He was a great big Finn. And he went by the name Irish Oly for years, to the day he died.
Maybe because of his connection with Irish
Mary,
the laundry lady.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Yes. That's the names that people got, and they stuck with them then.
Yeah.
Their names continue.
I don't know who named him, but somebody named him Irish Oly. That's the only name I ever knew for him.
Yes. Well, that must have been an interesting time. And so you did Pan. You liked Pan.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, and there on Hess Creek, was the panning any good there?
No, I'd done most of the panning before I went to, when I was on Esther Creek. We lived on Esther Creek for quite a while before we went to Live and Good.
I see.
And other creeks around. My mother cooked in the different camps. And when I was little, I panned with a pie tin because I couldn't handle a gold pan. Mm-hmm. And I had gold enough to make one of those glass lockets, you know, filled with gold. Mm. and somebody stole it, got lost, stolen or sprayed or something. It disappeared anyway.
Yes. Those things go by the way somehow.
Yeah.
Tell me, did you learn to pan in such a way that, did you learn where to find the good spots? Like, I like to pan too, but I never know where to pan. I understand that, you know, the gold sinks when it's carried along in fast water,
yeah.
Then you find a place where the water slows down and it makes a bend and that's where you take your pan.
That may be a good place.
But
yeah.
What did you learn?
Well, somebody made me or gave me a rocker. You know what a rocker is? And there was one outfit mining there, and their sluice boxes leaked. They didn't always get them tight. And around along the sluice box line, there'd be little dribbles of gravel that had leaked out, and I'd go along. They gave me permission to go along and scrape up this gravel, and that's what I rocked, put through the rocker. And then if their rock piles, if they had good rich ground, you could make wages scraping their rocks. They'd throw these great big rocks out of the sluice box with a big fork, pitchfork, and lots of gold would stick to these rocks. You take a wheelbarrow and scrape the dirt off these rocks into the wheelbarrow and then go and run it through the rocker.
How about that? That's pretty clever.
Well, I know people that made wages scraping rock piles.
Is that so?
When the ground was rich.
Is that
yeah.
so? I've got some FE company dredge tailing piles out there. I mean, I bought a couple of acres from the FE company out around the Fox.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the dredge would have left the rock scrapable or not.
I don't know either about the dredge.
I have to take my pan out there and I've been going to do that too for quite a while.
If you've got some rocks that have
Oh, I've got a lot. You want to
dirt
come out with me?
I'm not able to. I'd love to, but
ride along in the car. Anyway.
Yeah, it'd be.
Go look at my rock pile with me.
Your mother, did she ride Eskimo?
Yeah.
Oh, now I got
I am
you.
Eskimo. Mm-hmm.
I got your pig. I've got a copy of it.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah.
She's still living in the Tacoma now, the Lakewood Center area, but I'm kind of thinking of having her come up here. I put in an application at the Northwood building for her. But I miss her. My dad passed away two years ago.
Oh, he did.
Mm-hmm. And, so she has relatives in Southern California, but she has a problem now. She can't take the heat. I was in Hawaii 10 years ago, and she visited me there, got too much sun on the beach, and ever since then she just any kind of heat and she gets very faint.
Oh.
So this is why she's remained in the Tacoma area.
Uh-huh.
But I think, you know, it would be nice for her here. At any rate, so let's go on from Live and Good. Then you marry George.
Yes.
And what happened then?
Well, he kept on prospecting. Our wedding was kind of a odd one. We were married out in the yard in front of Mother's pansy bed. My stepfather went down the creek and invited everybody lived along the way to the wedding. So Mother sent to Fairbanks for a bunch of frying chickens, and she and another woman fried up a whole bunch of chickens and cooked a big dinner and fed all the fellows that came to the wedding.
And who married you?
What was his name? He was the commissioner, the justice of the peace.
From Live and Good?
Yeah. He spent many years in, not Kelso, what's next to Kelso in the state of Washington?
Yes, I know what you
that
mean.
Little town. He was justice of peace there for many, many years afterward.
Oh.
I can't think of his name right now.
Uh-huh. But now, did he come from Live and Good? Out to where you were?
He came out to the house.
And what creek were you on then?
Amy Creek.
That was on Amy Creek. Oh, yes, I've heard of Amy Creek.
Yeah, he came out.
Oh, darn. And when was that?
1918.
Oh. So then you stayed on there.
We stayed on for, well, I was there all told 10 years.
Uh-huh. So that was another 5 years, right?
Yeah. And when I left Leibengood, it was, I flew with Noel Wien, some of the first flights he made over there. In a little one-engine plane that looked like a toy nowadays.
Yes, yes.
And I had two little kids. And the oldest one was scared to death, that's Jess. He sat just like a wooden Indian the whole way. And the seat only came up to here, and this much he was sticking out in the air, you know. There was not any glass or any cover of any kind over it. You just had
And he was on your lap, was he?
He was sitting alongside of me in the seat, and I had the little girl. She was about 2. And she wanted to climb out, and I had a terrible fight with her to keep her in that plane. She was going to climb out. I finally put her down on the floor and clamped my knees and held her down by force. And she just screamed her head off, and she finally went to sleep. And when we got to Fairbanks, I asked her what she kicked up such a row for. She said, well, I wanted to go home and blow my nose. You know, when you get too much air, it feels like
of course.
It just about strangled you.
Gee, how old would she have been? Four
about
or five?
Two.
About two then?
Yeah.
Gee, and how old was Jess?
He was about 5, uh-huh. Pretty close to 5.
Goodness.
No, he must have been, there's 2 years, he must have been 4, there's 2 years between them.
And he wasn't too bad about it?
He was so scared, he just sat like he was froze.
Oh.
But she was petrified, she wanted to get out.
Oh, oh wow. And there you were, and how did you feel about it?
Well, I wasn't very crazy about it, and I never have been, but...
Was that your first flight?
Yeah. I was an oldie, and he was a fine-looking young fellow, and all the girls in the country were chasing him crazy.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could have had any girl in the Fairbanks area that was of marriageable age.
Yes. It's, he was over to the house the other day.
I wouldn't know him. I
haven't
seen him.
He's still a nice-looking man.
He's getting pretty well along in years, too.
Oh, he's very, very active. He's very, he came over. So, but you remember when Wayne first came there?
Oh, yeah.
Were you were in Fairbanks then?
No, we were in Leibengood, but we heard about it, of course.
Word reached you. Word got to you about it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, now, did he start an air service then right away? Out there, sort of?
I think so. And you mean to Leibengood?
Yes.
No, he flew around Fairbanks and waypoints for a while, and then he started flying to Leibengood. But the trouble was he could hardly get anybody to fly with him. Everybody was scared to death of airplanes. Grown men, they'd shudder when they'd look at that little thing. They wouldn't have gotten in it for $1 million.
Crazy flying machines.
Yeah, but they finally got over it and got accustomed to it.
Well, how did he get that landing strip built there at Leibengood, or where did he land?
Well, they just cleared off the top of a hillside.
I see. Well, that was quite an adventure you had, your first trip into Fairbanks.
Yeah, it was really kind of scary.
I'm sure with the two children that would have
yeah,
been.
But there was... going over the trail was a big project and would practically been an impossibility with two little kids.
Yes, that was a long trip in. What's that, 75 miles highway today?
Yeah, but by air it took hours, I think. Well, I've forgotten, but 3 hours at least or more.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, those little machines were slow.
They were, weren't they? Yes, uh-huh. But gee, that was, what was it, by wagon, it must have been...
It took a week,
yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, so where did you and George go after you left Leibengood?
We came to Fairbanks, and we bought a log cabin for $175.
Big price in those days.
Big price, yeah. had four rooms. It wasn't a bad cabin at all. And we lived in Fairbanks then for good many years. And we built a house up on 8th, that one right behind Jess, that big two-story house.
Oh.
And we lived there for quite a few years. The little kids were practically grown. Betty and Jess were grown up.
And did you have only the two children?
Three.
You had three.
Carl.
Carl.
He lives in Anchorage.
I see. And, well, go on and tell me the rest of what happened to you then.
Well, George had an offer from MK Company, so we left Fairbanks, which I've often wondered if it was a mistake, if we should have stayed on. And he went to work for MK as building superintendent, and he traveled around the country, and I spent part of the time in Anchorage, and then I'd go out to Seattle and spend the winter and come up here in the summer, and with nothing, you know, nothing much exciting.
And when did George
pass away?
Yes.
In 1960.
In 60?
Yeah.
I see. And when did you meet Mr. Erickson?
Well, I knew him for many years, him and his first wife.
Oh.
They were old Alaskans. We could go back 60 years and talk about people we were both good friends of. But we didn't know one another, but we knew other people that were good friends of his and good friends of mine back 60 years and more.
So that he came to Fairbanks in the early days?
In 1909.
I see, to mine.
Well, yes, I guess.
Or
just adventure, he was only a kid. And
mm-hmm.
Came up to see what there was to see.
And where did he come from?
Norway.
Yes. Uh-huh. And, well, when did you first meet Mr. Erickson?
I really don't remember. It's been so many years ago that I don't remember.
Well, after Mr. Bachter passed away, how did you and Mr. Erickson come
well,
together?
His niece, Olga Doheny, do you know her?
Yes, I know her.
She, Olga, had been a good friend of mine for 30 years.
Oh.
So, she took me to, Arnie cooked a big dinner one time and invited Olga over, and it was my birthday and George was out of town, so she called up Arnie, wanted to know if she could bring me, and well, this was while George was still living, and then we got better acquainted, and after George passed away, Arnie came up to visit me, and one thing led to another, and we decided to pool our old age.
Yes, yes.
Because we were both lonesome, and
yes.
My kids thought it was a wonderful idea. They all knew him, and
yes.
And he'd been a widower for quite a few years. So.
Well, now you've been living in Anchorage, but you just returned to Fairbanks.
Yeah, we came up here because. Well, Arnie had a stroke in March, and I've had Parkinson's for 5 years, so I'm not very able to do much.
Uh-huh.
And living in Anchorage is impossible. The rest homes want $1,500 a month for him. And then if you get a housekeeper, I tried having a housekeeper, they want $1,500 a month, and they don't want to do it. They want you to hire a cleaning woman besides. And I couldn't live alone. I tried it with him in a rest home, and it just didn't work. So one night the Palmer home was full. They have a waiting list of about 60. And of course the Anchorage one has just started. It won't be built for heaven knows how long. So I got to thinking one night about coming up here, so I called Jess's wife and told her to find out if they had any room. And she called back and said they had plenty of room in the new wing, so.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The next morning, Carl got on the phone and made the arrangements. But we hated to leave the old place and all of our 50 years gatherings and
In Anchorage.
Yeah.
Well, that's very hard to part with the quantity of things that you have.
Yeah, Arnie lived in that house about 50 years. Had many things he'd have.